Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-oh, 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 hey-oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
We all got generations of generations. Our ancestors and elders took special care in their decision-making to ensure us a prosperous future. Respect and honor towards our elders. We hold the truth, the secrets, and lessons of life and of our past. It is time for us to conduct ourselves properly in accordance to the ancient ways that have been entrusted to us. We preserve our strength for you with words, with our songs, with our dance. We show our love for you.
Seventh Generation, a song by Haudenosaunee singer-songwriter Howard Lyons from his Sound of America recording CD entitled Spirit Rock. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices on Radio for Peace International. RFPI is Global Community Radio. In today's Wolf Mountain program, we are very honored to share a visit with one of the finest Native writers, educator, and scholar activist in Indian country, Professor Gabe Horn. In addition to serving on Yat Kiddishi Native Center's Advisory Council, Gabe is a close personal friend to Betty and I. We are brothers in spirit and brothers in honoring Mother Earth and our Indigenous movement. We first met 10 years ago, while both of us were speakers at a Native conference focusing on the true history and legacy of Christopher Columbus during the so-called Columbus Quincentenary. Over the years, our hearts grow strong together, sharing ceremony and working together on projects to defend Sacred Mother Earth, for Native rights, and for social justice. Gabe Horn and I also share a similar history of experiences growing up in the Indian movement, which makes me proud of him as a brother warrior. Listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have heard me praise his fine book, Native Heart, An American Indian Odyssey, published by New World Library. I again urge everyone who cares about the Native struggle and who wishes an insight into what many fine AIM brothers and sisters went through, read Gabe's book, Native Heart. Professor Horn is a nationally known writer. In addition to Native Heart, Gabe wrote a four-book Native People, Native Ways series entitled The Native American Book of Wisdom, Book of Life, Book of Change, and Book of Knowledge. These are excellent writings for all ages, published by Beyond Words Press. Professor Horn authored the fine book, Contemplations of a Primal Mind, published by the University of Florida Press. Listeners to our Wolf Mountain broadcasts have also heard the 8-program series audio literature presentation of the book, Wisdom Keepers, Meetings with Native American Spiritual Elders, by authors Harvey Arden and Steve Wall. That beautiful book, published by Beyond Words Press, was edited by our program guest, my brother Gabe Horn. Last but certainly not least, Gabe's latest work, The Book of Ceremonies, A Native Way of Honoring and Living the Sacred, is a very special and precious literature, published by New World Library. The beautiful illustrations in this Book of Ceremonies was drawn by his very talented artist son, Carissus Horn. As a special treat for our listeners to honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, my brother Gabe Horn gifted us a newly released CD that features excerpts from his Book of Ceremonies, which he also gave me permission to include in our interview and air on Radio for Peace International. This beautiful CD includes selections read by the author, Gabe Horn, accompanied by music from our friend Dennis Harrison. Listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have also heard the beautiful song, Free Peltier, written by Dennis, from the Songs for Justice Project CD, which Betty and I are proud to be a part of, along with Gabe Horn, Ted Williams, and Diana Osborne. We will share that special Free Peltier song later on during the interview with my brother, Gabe Horn. As an honor to Gabe and his fine family, we begin with an audio excerpt from his Book of Ceremonies CD entitled The Turtle Dream.
It is deep within the sacred place inside our own hearts that we journey through dark waters of the dream world as spirit, traveling alone across the invisible spaces to other worlds where the ancestors come to share their love and their teachings with us, so that we may see things as they truly are. It was in this holy dream time that a young man slept in his little house by the sea. The moon was nearly full and the night was filled with stars. The sweet song of Mother Ocean's waves upon the shore and her gentle breath of the palms helped his spirit to float peacefully beyond, past the dark, silent waters of the void, where he heard Great-Grandmother speak to him. I am the Maker, and I am the Faith in Abundance. In the darkness of the dream world, he could not yet see, but her presence and the sound of her voice pounded in his chest like the thunder of a great medicine drum. He stood silently in the blackness of the void, his heart racing and his eyes straining to see, when, like a gentle dawn, a red golden glow of light slowly rolled from the shadows, and the one who had spoken became visible to him. He stood in awe, his eyes wide with amazement, for the great-grandmother had come to him in the form of a giant sea turtle. She was greater in size and more beautiful than anything he had ever seen. The back of her shell rose up like a blue-green mountain into the night sky. Her huge head, wide as 3 of his arm lengths,
bent forward, as if in prayer. He could see her clearly now, for her entire being radiated the sacred glow that encircled them both in a sacred hoop of golden light. The ancient lines and wrinkles of her face held untold stories of mystery, and her dark, watery eyes gazed lovingly upon him with a beauty and compassion he had never known. He stood before her in the sand, beside the great ocean from which she had come to make her nest. Without speaking, the young man thought, "The mystery reveals itself to me as a giant sea turtle, a symbol of creation." Hearing his thoughts, Great Grandmother slowly turned her head and looked deep into his eyes and asked, "Who is the maker if not I?" The young man's eyes filled with tears, for his heart now knew the profound truth of her words. In that moment, Great Grandmother had given him wisdom. Surely he was the maker of all things, and every woman who brings forth life, be she turtle, dolphin, wolf, spider, or human, is the maker, and should be so respected and honored. Great tears began to flow from the dark pools of Grandmother's eyes. Her voice was weary, but loving and gentle. "You must have faith. You must believe that there is always bounty, that there is always goodness, and that always there is enough love." With a nod, Grandmother bowed her head and smiled at him. "There is never any need to fear. You and your brother are children of the mystery. And you are both so loved. All that you need is given to you with such love." With these words, Grandmother Turtle swept away the sand beneath her and nestled her great being close to the earth. Her breath became heavy, and she strained as she turned to him. "Now is the time for you to bring forth all the bounty and all the love that is within you, just as I now bring forth all the wonder that is within me." With a great sigh, Grandmother Turtle closed her eyes and began to release her eggs gently into the sand. Each egg was a giant white orb that radiated the same red golden glow as the maker herself. One after another, they came from her like small planets or stars in an endless flow of creation. As he gazed upon the holy vision before him, the young man understood in his heart the reason for her flow of tears. Exhausted from her work, she slowly lifted her head so she could again look deep into his eyes. "I know that so many of my children will not live. They will not survive the storms and the currents and all those who would do them harm. But still, I bring them forth, all of them, with such hope and faith, for each one carries the promise of goodness and hope and love." It was his tears that told Great Grandmother that he understood her message with his heart. She nodded and smiled sweetly. "You who are my children have the goodness and the courage to endure all things, to hope all things, to dream all things, and to become all things for yourselves and for all the children who will follow you." The young man moved closer and sat quietly with her in the sacred place she had created. After a time, A soft veil of darkness fell over the young man's eyes, and he felt himself gently begin to return to the dream world. When he awoke, his eyes were still wet with tears, but his heart was filled with love and thankfulness for this dream. The holiness of it was still all around him and filled his tiny room and beyond. Slowly he rose from his bed and walked out into the moonlight with his pipe and pouch of sacred tobacco to offer prayers of gratitude for the journey he had been given. He looked up into the night sky and could not believe his eyes. The moon was shining with the same red golden glow that Grandmother Turtle had created in his dream. His laughter and cries of joy and thankfulness filled the air and soon awoke his brother who came running. The two brothers sat together beneath the stars, and upon the pipe the young man told his brother of his journey through dream time and the teaching that had been given to them both. Suddenly, there in the golden glow of Grandmother baby turtles, hundreds of them, coming up and out of the sand from their nest, from her, one after another, in an endless flow.
My guest today is native author and educator Gabe Hoehn. I have the honor to be visiting Gabe in his home this afternoon. Gabe, before we continue our conversation, I want to again thank you for your friendship to Betty and I, as well as your long service to our Indian peoples. Aho. My next question is about racism towards our Indian peoples, and in particular, the way in which native names are often misused and which are often very demeaning and insulting to us. For example, sport teams called the Washington Redskins, FSU's Chief Osceola, the mascot that rides out during halftime in a ridiculous outfit and screams nonsensical words, Atlanta Braves spectator stupid tomahawk chop. Unfortunately, there are many others I could name. In addition, white businesses have marketed products misusing native names or symbols in very disrespecting ways, such as Crazy Horse Bear, the video game that was named Custer's Last Revenge, plastic toy eagle feather headdresses. That's just a few examples among many I could cite. I won't even attempt to discuss the horrific problem of demeaning depictions of Native peoples in school books or the many mistruths seen in history curricula, even in today's classrooms, that portray our ancestors as savages or uncivilized, while showing white explorers, missionaries, and pioneers as good and righteous settlers. Likewise, there is the whole subject of how our indigenous peoples are depicted in the movies and on television. For many years, we were either the stereotypical warrior or drunk Indian, if and when Indians were portrayed at all. Most often, the actors were non-native, even in the very few films or TV shows that had an Indian subject. Lastly, before you respond to my question, there was also the concern of how news media rarely covers Native issues, or the few times they do report, the journalist only focuses on an extreme case that is commonly unrepresentative of the Indian community in general. Several years ago, you and I participated in a seminar by the renowned Journalism Center, the Poynter Institute, where we spoke to news editors and reporters about this problem of the media either ignoring American Indian issues or the negative and often ignorant ways in which the press reports on Native affairs. I know this is a big topic, but would you please share your thoughts on this question of racism and disrespect to our indigenous peoples by the misuse of Native names in stereotypical imagery?
Well, I'll take you into my classroom about a year ago. A student walks into my classroom wearing a Cleveland Indian baseball at. I think they were in the World Series that year. And of course everybody knows the fame, the infamous, the notorious Chief Wahoo. Big nose, buck tooth, stupid looking caricature that is called an Indian. And he's wearing this hat in my classroom. It freaked me out, you know. I'd been his teacher all semester. I'd shared with him everything good I could about writing and about life. Here he is walking in, knowing that my family is Native American, this baseball hat. So inside, like many of us, which is probably what I mentioned, we get diseases like gallbladder disease and all kinds of other diseases because we hold this rage in, or it goes in somewhere and doesn't come out. I was enraged inside, but I'm a teacher, and this was a teaching moment. So I asked him to come into my office, and he walked into my office, and meanwhile my rage, I'm still holding my rage in, because inside I'm still shaking, because I want to just rip that hat off his head, with his head in it or not. But at the other hand, I'm a teacher. So I sit down, try to get my composure, and I ask him to sit down. I have pictures of my nieces, my nephews, Simone when she was alive, my children in my office, all beautiful, beautiful Indians. And I showed him one picture after another, and of course being a young man, 19, 20 years old, 21 years old, of course when he saw my nieces and nephews, and my nieces and my daughter, of course he goes, whoa, you know, they're beautiful. And I could see, you know, that male part, that male side of him get very attracted to them right away. And then of course I showed him my handsome sons and grandmothers and aunties and different pictures I had. And he says, and he's looking at them, and I said, take off your hat, would you? He took off his hat and I said, now look at those pictures and look at that hat. I thought he was going to cry right there in my office. He practically dropped, I think he did drop the hat to his lap. And he said, Professor Horn, I'm sorry, man. I never saw it like this. And I said, exactly. Do any of these beautiful beings look like that hideous goddamn caricature that you got on your head? That was it. The next year I had him for another class. He took me again. And we had to do research papers. And in this class, they could do research papers on anything they want. And he came up to me and he says, Professor Horn, would you mind if I did research on the Native American issues with the mascot? And I said, by all means, go for it. I think that's all that has to be said. You hold that stupid, hideous symbol up to any Native person's face, and you see what that Native person has to look at. I remember one day, I got a we're not into taking a whole lot of pictures around here, but once in a while when they get taken, it creates some excitement. And we got some back, somebody had taken, and my son was looking at these pictures. And I thought he looked so beautiful. I thought he looked so handsome. I was so proud of him. And I said, I was sitting in the other room, and he was looking at him. I said, they're pretty neat pictures, eh? And he said, oh, my nose is so big. And man, you might as well stab me in the heart. Because what Indian at some point in your life doesn't think your nose is big because of those stupid stereotypes? Because what do they focus on always? They do serious damage, man. They not only do them, but, you know, as long as they can stereotype Native people that way, then they never have to take us seriously. You know, as long as they can tomahawk chop in idiocy like they do at Florida State, they don't have to think about Leonard Peltier languishing in prison in an unjust system. They don't have to think about what they're doing to the land, about Mother Earth. They don't have to think about those things because they got their own world created. And that's why the Redskins and is still the Redskins in the Capitol, because, you know, hell, those senators are there rooting for the Redskins. You know, what do you think their legislation is going to be like when they go to vote for real Indian people on Monday? Especially, hell, if the team loses on Sunday, puts them in a bad mood, you know? What the hell is that all about? So I kind of like the idea, you know, just put it in, you know, Redskins. What's synonymous with Redskins? Well, we got kikes, we got niggers, we got spicks, you know, we got wops. You know, we got derogatory terms for every race and ethnic group and nationality there is in the world. You know, always somebody to come up with something to degrade somebody else, you know? But you don't see them named for teams, so don't give me this crap about, well, then we're going to have to change the names of the dolphins because, you know, well, we know how you regard animals, you know, in this society. So you're equating us with animals then. You know? So if you want to call your team the Padres, you know, like out there, that's the business of the Catholics to take up, you know. And you want to dance around like priests, you know, go ahead and do that if you find that's amusing or whatever, you know. I hope I'm never in that state of mind. But damn it, you know, we haven't got the political power to stop you. We haven't got the arsenal to stop you. You only got your own spirit, your own consciousness. You know, maybe in they'll get it someday. They'll evolve someday to be a part of that circle of life and respect all life. You know, Jesse Jackson, when he was in Cleveland, of all places, espousing espousing that there should be minorities in management and baseball. You know, when behind him is a Cleveland Indian logo. You know, come on. You know. I never saw him take that issue on, because I wonder how would it look with the, you know, with the stereotype of a big lipped, you know, with a bone in the nose, you know, come on, you know, Chief Watusi, you know, or something like that. Give me a break. You know, how do you think, I mean, what does it look like to see a black ball player running around the bases with the stereotype of another people's race on his helmet, and then he's talking about, you know, equal rights and this kind of thing. Come on. You know, get with it. You know, you think you respect all people or you don't. So, you know, you know, the Seminole Incorporated. I'll say Seminole Incorporated because I know there are Seminole people who are of the or Seminoles in their tradition and their way of looking at life. But if the chief of the Seminole or the president or the director, whatever he's called, of the Seminole Tribe Incorporated, gives his name to use of the Seminole people to a football team, you know, he has to. Let me give you an example. It's not just the Seminoles that are involved, because, you know, my kids get behind. And other Indian children and people have to get behind the bumper stickers that say, you know, hit me, there's a Seminole in my trunk, or Seminoles are ugly and their mothers dress them funny. And these are the bumper stickers that you see around town, you know, are the people who are not obviously of Florida State. And of course, Seminoles are Indians, they're Native Americans, and that reflects on us all. When I was going to an indigenous people's conference where scholars of Indian people were meeting in Gainesville at the University of Florida, the first thing that greeted my family and I when we got on the campus was a sign that said, Chief Assihola takes it in the butt. Because Florida, University of Florida was taking on Florida State University that weekend. Of course, that's what they call their mascot, Chief Osceola, or Chief Savvy Sema, whatever. They don't even know what they call him at the University of Florida. But Chief Osceola takes it in the butt. You know, you have something like Chief Martin Luther King takes it up the ass or something like that. Now, how would that go over? That wouldn't last 2 days, you know, or anything about John Kennedy or anyone, any of the sacred cows of Euro-America wouldn't last a day. But do it to Native Americans, sure. Oh, yeah, of course, you know, you've got the Fighting Irish. And, of course, you equate the Irish with fighting all the time. Of course, you don't say that they're fighting against the oppression of the British and their country. But you always equate them with shamrocks. And, you know, we use the stereotype of the Fighting Irish and drinking and shamrocks and things like that. And isn't that well? And, of course, they tell the Irish, I'm sure, it's like they tell the Native, we're honoring you. You know, this is an honor. Well, you look at that stereotype. And you put your grandmother in that face, and you put your child in that face, and you tell your child that's an image of his race as seen by the dominant race in his country. It's interesting, but we did go up to Florida A&M University and talk to them. And recently, I went up to Florida State University as a guest of the Black, I believe it was the Black Honor Society. And as far as I know, that the Black Student Union has voted to boycott the tomahawk chop at Florida State University. Of course, where did tomahawk chop originated? One of two places. The first one is, this is how American colonists used to kill Native Americans. Men, women, and children, they would bound them with hands tied behind their back, in a line, and systematically go down with the tomahawk and club them to death with the tomahawk. This is documented. That's where the tomahawk chop originated. Now, but if you're not going to say, not claim that one, then you got to claim, well, it originated from men defending their country, men defending their families against guns and weapons of war with tomahawk. Okay? which one are you ridiculing here? Which one are you demeaning here? Which one are you making into, you know, Mr. Ted Turner and Jane Fonda? Come on, give me a break, huh? Atlanta Braves, and you do some things for Native people that you kind of sell half truths there, and then you think, oh, well, it's okay because I can use the Atlanta Braves and I can do the tomahawk chop because I'm really helping Indian people on the side by educating. No, you're not. Okay, change the name. You know. You know, the Viet Cong fought fiercely to protect their country, you know. How about the Atlanta Cong, you know? And maybe you can, you know, do something to mimic their culture or their defense of their homeland. You wouldn't do it. And so the point is that, I don't know, it's a way to put Native Americans out of the world of this reality and not deal with the fact that Native Americans represent Mother Earth and Father Sky, and they represent a way of life. And as long as you can demean that, as long as that can, we allow, that is allowed to be maintained, that demeaning is allowed to maintain, then you don't have to honor the earth, you don't have to honor the sky, and you don't have to honor the indigenous people all over the Americas or all over the world, you know. I wonder if in Australia, one of their football teams is called the Abos, you know, and if they have a mascot of an Aborigine, or, think about it. Or do we have a mascot that's Japanese? You know, no, you don't, because that's economy there. That's money there. Native Americans have never been a viable, you know, economy in this country in the sense of spending. So you could change the Frito Bandito because, hey, the Mexican Americans, that's a viable economy. So you got to change that. Although I see what you're doing with the Chihuahua there, you know. So, you know, simple respect. It's not being politically correct either. It's being respectful. Just simple respect for people, their race, their culture, their nationality. And anything less than that is not tolerable. So I don't even let students in my room wearing Florida State attire. I'm sorry. That's degrading to a race of people, and I won't tolerate that and teach in that environment. And I'm just supporting what I'm told to support, the respect for all cultures and races.
You're charming. It in the secret way. No one to show us how to pray. No need of guilt. No need of shame. We had no doubt. Jesus is the name. Until the Christians came, until the Christians came, until the Christians came, until the Christians came. Time.
at the top. Turn the way of light. Those strong enough to resist. Working within an inch of their lives. When the Christian is gay.
Concerns I have is the disrespect by the Wampisketonk, the people from across the waters, when in English is called the European Americans, the white people in some language, especially when it comes to the digging up of our Nishitanminooks, our ancestors, the sacred burial remains, and also the theft of sacred objects that are found in some of the native mounds and some of the native graves, sacred pipes, sacred bundles, other prayer objects that unfortunately have been stolen and sold, some displayed in museums and others just kept locked in private so-called art collections in museums. And it's a really serious concern of many of us that this continual disrespect of our spirit way of life and our ancestors' spirit is disturbed. Would you share your thoughts on specifically the issue of desecrating our sacred burial sites and the theft of many of our sacred objects?
I just read recently that where we go and watch the turtles be born here on the beach, there was a whole series of islands. Now it's all connected by bridges and causeways and stuff. Still, the turtles come here as they have been for tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years. On this island where we watched the turtles be born, I learned that there was a great turtle mound. And it was described by the white people who came here, how big it was. It was huge. And I thought, geez, it makes sense, you know, the turtle mound. This is where the turtles come. This is where we come to watch them go to the sea. What happened to that mound? They used it to make their streets with. What happened to most of the mounds here? They used it to pave, nothing was sacred. Anything that reminded them of that they didn't belong here, rather than a respect and live in harmony with what was here, they destroyed everything. They destroyed the mounds. And in those mounds, of course, there were burial mounds among those mounds. It's to the point where, you know, when I asked my uncles how they were going to be buried, you know, because we got to that point where we were talking, and they said, we're going to be cremated. And I thought, well, I was young, and I thought, well, is that a traditional way to bury? And my uncle said, heck, I don't want anybody picking at my bones 10 years from now, 20 years from now, even 100 years from now. And I know that we treated my wife the same way with her body. We put the remains in a place where no one will find it, because the idea of anyone using it, violating those bones, and for what purpose? For what purpose? If they want to know anything, they can just ask Native people. There are Native scholars all over this land. There are Native traditional healers all over this land. There are Native historians all over this land. If they want to know something, they can ask. But they've created a business, a scholarship, out of going into Native American graves and say they're learning about. Well, there are other ways to learn about people. They've created it's all about money, it's all about grants, it's all about, you know, as my Uncle Nip used to say, you know, what are they looking for? Until they find the toe-tagged Adam and the one-tagged Eve, you know, they're never going to stop. You know, so I think anthropology and archaeology as institutions are racist. You know, I think that they try to cram that theory as fact about the migration across the Bering Strait and all that. Just like they do to try to tell us, you know, that we came from an ape in South Africa, Central Africa. They could ask Native Americans, where did you come from? Or they could learn, just like Native Americans have to learn. And some of them, you know, some of us have forgotten too, and need to be taught and seek it in dreams and in visions, these answers. They don't come from violating people's bones or graves. My gosh, I could no more do that. What makes me not want to go through your great-grandfather's grave and take things out of that grave and use them for display? I mean, they've got actual remains, human remains on display, and people pay to go see that. I mean, what does this say about a people? You know, I would say, okay, if that's the way you want to do it, then you got to do it that way. I mean, if that you want to display your popes down in the vaults in Italy, wherever you want to do that, in the catacombs, that's your business. But you're in America here. You're in another people's country. And that doesn't give you the right. What does give you the right to do that? Is it your religion? Is it your God that gives you that right? You respect the people who lived here. And that includes respecting their ancestors. And if they respect their ancestors and their ancestors' graves, then you respect their ancestors' graves. Because what you need to learn, you're not going to learn it from a bone that violates somebody's grave. You're going to learn it through your own heart and through your own soul.
Still keep coming like that, that is to our land. To study their feathered freaks with funded money in their hands. Like the thunder after doom, the cameras took away, taking notes of sacred morning from all the animals that play. Here comes the Anzo, and I just passed away. Here comes the Anzo, on another holiday. And the Anzo bring their friends to see the circus, watch the show. And when the tents are untried, they pack up the things and away they go. There's nothing left to study, there's nothing left to see. Will the Anzo keep on searching for the truth and for the key? Here comes the Anzo, where had you passed away? Here comes the Anzo, on another holiday. Then back they go to write their book and tell the world there's more. nothing left to write. It's all been done before. And on a chance to find the money that the Andros get to spend, never given to their disappearing feathered friends. Here come the Andros, their happy fans away. Here come the Andros on another holiday. And the Andros keep on digging our sacred ceremonial sites, as if there was nothing wrong, cause education gives them the right. But the more they keep on digging, the less they really do, as they got no respect for you or for me. Here come the Andros, that I could pass away. Here come the Andros on another holiday.
You are listening to the American Indian Movement's Honoring Song. This is Rope Mountain Press, a documentary program focusing on Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Rope Mountain Press will present the situations facing Indian peoples throughout the world with Native music, poetry, news, and Indian case histories, and the struggle to protect Mother Earth and the sacred ways of life of Native peoples. Well, dear friends, we are nearing the end of our time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio. Next week, we continue my interview with nationally noted author and educator, my warrior brother Gabe Horn, in program 4 of the special series, Native Heart, A Conversation with Gabe Horn. The music we featured in today's program were a song entitled When the Christians Came by singer-songwriter Dennis Harrison, whose flute music you also heard in today's program when we played The Turtle Dream, the excerpt from Gabe's Book of Ceremonies CD. The song, When the Christians Came, is from the Songs for Justice Project that includes Dennis Harrison, Gabe Horn, Ted Williams, Diana Osborne, my spirit wife Betty Hurst, and myself, Oness. We also heard an old recording by the well-known actor, singer, songwriter, and activist, Floyd Red Crow Westerman singing, Here Come the Andros. I apologize for the poor audio quality. I recorded that song from a live performance way back in 1987 when Floyd Westerman sang at an American Indian Movement, African National Congress, National Tour in Solidarity to Free Leonard Peltier and Nelson Mandela event in Boston, which our Wolf Mountain Native Radio program on WMFO helped to organize, along with the United American Indians of New England and the Boston Native American Support Group, which Betty and I were active in. We shall conclude today's broadcast with a round dance song from the Northern Cree Singers. Often the round dance invites everyone to dance together in the circle and honor the Creator in all of our relations. Until the next Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, this is your host and producer, Oness Pritzker. Aho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.